Okay, we are on Gemara Sota Mem Tes Amid Aleph 49a. You see there's a bracket there, and the bracket, it's not clear whether the next part is a continuation of the original Mishnah or it's a Brisa that the Gemara is quoting now, and it just was later appended incorrectly to the Mishnah. So what does it mean? So, you know, there's commentaries on the Mishnayos, exclusively on the Mishnayos. Rabbeinu Avadya Bartanura and the Rambam have a commentary exclusively on the Mishnah, and they don't have any commentary on the next few lines, so it would appear from their text that was not a Mishnah, it was a Braisa. However, in the Jerusalem part, Talmud appears to be part of the Mishnah, so it's not clear. Either way, it's true Torah, and it's more things that declined after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So either way, it's the same theme. Rav Pinchas ben Yair Omer. Rav Pinchas ben Yair said, "What's this little thing doing here?" Mishachar Beis Hamikdash. When the Beis Hamikdash is destroyed, Boshu Chaverim Uvenei Chorim. What does that mean? That Chaverim. We have to explain what are Chaverim, and highborn men have been ashamed. What are chaverim? Chaverim means companions. It's a common designation for Torah scholars and their followers. So it's a Talmud chaver, like a companion. And specifically, scholarly people, and they had to have, and they would keep special laws of Tum and Tara. If you were a very pious person and a scholar, you were very particular with the laws of Tara, even though other people did not have to be particular. So that was a chaver. And what does it mean? High-born men, literally means free men, people of known lineage, as opposed to those who are not sure about their lineage. All right? So those two things stopped. Okay? That's what it's... Well, rather, they were ashamed. That's the wording it says. Have been ashamed. Why they were ashamed? It says social hierarchy has collapsed. Which means the riffraff, the locals, the ignorant, non-lineage people, the Amorites freely ridiculed Chaverim for what the Amorites consider excessive scrupulosity. Slaves and people of dubious parentage taunt the high-born with innuendo concerning their own ancestry. In other words, it's the low people are thinking they're the bosses, and they don't give respect where respect is due. You know, it's like no different than secular people deriding Haredim for no reason. Yeah, for no reason. You think, you know, and they even think they're lesser than anybody because they're backwards people and things like that. So that's the same idea. So therefore, they would shame them because since the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. And what else? V'chafu roshim, their heads have been covered, meaning they hide their faces from embarrassment. And also, v'nidaldalu anshe maisa, and men of merit have been impoverished. In other words, they're not the people in charge anymore, and the evil people are running the show. And also, v'gavrei balei zroa ubalei lashon, and strong-armed men and slanderers are the ones who are triumphing. That's what's happening. Lashon hara and strength are what is deciding things, and not Torah scholarship and morals. Also, ve'ein doresh, ve'ein mabakesh, ve'ein shol. There's no one who seeks, no one who searches, and no one who inquires. It's an expression borrowing from the prophet Yechezkel, where he says, my sheep have scattered all over the earth, and there is none who seek, and none who searches. No one who seeks to benefit Israel, and no one beseeches for God's mercy upon them. In other words, there's no person who can offer, perhaps no one who sufficiently desires. Nobody's interested in fixing things up. No one's interested in talking to Hashem. No one's interested in helping the plight of people. And therefore, this is all Rav Pinchas and yours, all his statement. Al mi lanu lishon, who can we rely on? Al avinu b'shamayim, just upon our Father in heaven. Nobody, you can't go to, the righteous people are powerless. We only can ask for Hashem. That is Rav Pinchas ben Yair. Next rabbi. Rabbi Eliezer HaGodlomer, Rabbi Eliezer the Great. Who is this one? This Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, who was the most famous of the five students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Okay? So whenever we have Rabbi Eliezer, and there's no other, so the Tana Rabbi Eliezer, who's frequently mentioned in the Mishnah with no additional appellation is this Rebbe Eliezer. There was two. This is Rebbe Eliezer. Whenever we have Rebbe Eliezer, it's Rebbe Eliezer ben Hyrcanus, who was the premier student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Rebbe Eliezer HaGadol says, Miyom Shechar Beis HaMikdash, when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Sharu Chakimayo LeMehevi Kisafraya, scholars began to be like school teachers. That's a step down. Okay? Visafraya Kechazanaya, and school teachers like school synagogue attendants. So every category slipped down. And what about the Vechazina and the synagogue attendants? Ka'amadara, like the commoners. Okay, what about the commoners then? The Amud are the commoners. What have they become? Going on to the last Amud, 49b, Uzla v'daldala, and became steadily more impoverished in wisdom and observance. So they became even worse. And now we say the same refrain. Let's just make it a little bit bigger. Ve'in shol ve'mevakesh. And there's no one who inquires and no one who searches. Immediately showing who can we rely on except Alavina Shabashamayim, our Father in Heaven. Now, this Brisa or Mishnah, whatever it is, shifts gears and is going to talk about our times. What does that mean? Mishnah says, Be'ikvas Mashiach, when we're coming to the footsteps of the Mashiach, the period of time that precedes the Mashiach, literally, it means with the heels of the Mashiach. It's a borrowed expression from Tehillim. The simile refers to the final period of exile. Mashiach will not yet have come, but signs of his imminent arrival will be discerned, as though his approaching footsteps were already audible. That's from the word Akev. The root word Ikvasa is the Akev. Alternatively, Akev, a heel, the lowest extremity of the human body, may be used as a synonym for the end. So ikvasa de Mashiach simply denotes the end of the time before Mashiach. Okay? So now, also, it's going to be interesting, this Shabbos afternoon, we're going to be talking a lot about Akev. Ikvasa de Mashiach also means, when we're talking about Akev being the lowest part of the body, that means the Jewish people will be in the lowest state. In other words, it's going to really be bad. That's what Akev, the heel, is the lowest part of the person. So we're going to be in the lowest part, and it'll be the hardest time to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, so then that's the answer. So everyone asks, well, if Mashiach hasn't come when such great rabbis were alive, how is it going to come now? We don't have the Chafetz Chaim. We don't have any of the great Rambam. None of them. The answer is, none of them lived in such spiritually deprived times as we live today. So therefore, a Jew who just does regular Yiddishkeit today is an incredible person. And you're going to see these. And so the rabbi said, there's certain signs that we've hit a very bad level. So number one is chutzpah yaski. Insolence will increase. People have chutzpah. So there's no shortage of that. Today, everybody's critical. Every Joe Blow is a critic. And they have all kinds of chutzpah, number one. Number two, v'yolke yamir, and costs will soar, inflation. Yeah. Now, look at this. Gemara lists insolence and desistance from Torah study among those sins which bring droughts and result in high prices. The curse of inflation is therefore a direct consequence of two conditions enumerated earlier. The decline of scholarship until scholars are like school teachers. We just had that. An increase of insolence. So you got those two things. So you have inflation. Okay? And that is true. There is inflation, right? What does a car cost today? What did it cost 40 years? What?
Only tuition.
Only tuition. Inflation is
variable. Yeah, you know, it's relative. Relative. It's just the last couple of years. What about housing? It doesn't matter, but if a house costs more, it doesn't matter.
Everything
people
costs.
Can't afford to buy a house now.
Yeah, right.
They can't afford to buy a house.
Yeah,
everything. I don't know. With no inflation, the prices keep going up anyway. I don't understand why there's no inflation. Anyway, but in general, things are cost much more.
Yeah.
The overall, I know you're going to say, well, your dollar isn't worth the same. Whatever. Things are, believe me, if a house in Toronto costs $1 million. The average house is $1 million. And your buying power hasn't grown that much.
No.
Your buying power is not growing. Just wait till the interest rates go up. Then you're gonna, but then you're going to see people going.
Houses are high for sure.
Houses.
And general inflation in the U.S.
Shelley, it's relative. What do I mean, relative? There are more people now unemployed than ever before in the history of the world.
That's correct.
Especially United States. As much as Obama is saying inflation is 5%, you know what that means? They're not figuring that 50 million Americans gave up on working already. Unemployment means I'm looking for a job, I can't find a job. But when you got like 50 million people said I gave up on giving a job, that's already a built-in 16%, right? So, and when you don't have a job, then everything's expensive. You know, people don't figure that as part of inflation. You know, I'm making a good living, so it costs a little more. And people making zero, then every little thing. So I'm just saying things get expensive. That's what he's saying. Costs will soar if you don't have money, you know. Number two, right? Number three. Hagefen titain piryo, the vine will yield its fruit, but still vayayin beyoker, yet wine will be expensive.
Sure.
All right? So you have a plentiful supply of grapes. You know, wine should not cost $20 a bottle. It's fine, but it's expensive. That's right. You have a lot of grapes in Ontario. Lots of grapes. Shouldn't be costing that kind of money. So, okay, you're going to... The government's taking it. Doesn't matter who's taking. It's expensive. If something comes out of grapes, how much? Even a simple thing, Ketum grape juice. My God, it's ridiculous. A bottle of grape juice should cost it. So you're going to say Canadian dollar? I don't care what it is. It's expensive. Finished.
It costs $20 for a liter of wine, 750 mils, and it costs you $1.20 for a liter of gas.
Which would be
39 cents.
Excuse me, it was 39 cents a gallon.
Okay, anyway. You're just being low by this temporary. Like, you look over 50 years. You know, you look at the last couple of years, they've been okay. But look over 50 years, how much everything is. It's just so much more. And you're not making so much more. In the last 50 years, how much you're making more is not keeping up with how much things are costing more. That's what inflation is. It's a decline. You know, people have money that they don't feel it's inflation, but those who don't really feel it. Next one. It's all coming true, right? Umalchus and the kingdoms tehepach laminus. Government will turn to heresy. Vein totachos shall be no rebuke. Right? The world's dominant power, right? United States, Russia, will aid and spread of non-belief. Right? They took everything out of the classroom. The prayer to God is out of the classroom. Everything's out of the classroom. There'll be no rebuke. Hillary Clinton revealed yesterday she did every criminal thing you could do in Benghazi, and all the networks except for Fox News says, that's old news, nothing new. Didn't hear anything new. She even tweets to her daughter. She sends an email to her daughter that she knows that they didn't have enough security, and they spin a whole thing. There was a video. It's like they're momish. You can't rebuke them. They're wrong, and you can't rebuke them. That's all. No one will be able to reproach another because all men will be iniquitous. When a sinner is admonished, he'll still be reproached. You're no better than I. Alternative, and there shall be no proof. The bearers of truth will be unable to demonstrate the falsity of heretical views. So we got that one. We're four for four, no?
Yeah, we're doing good.
Okay, base vad yelus nus. The meeting places of the sages will be used for harlotry. In Tanaic times, bate medrash were generally built outside the towns. With the decline of Torah study, they fall into disuse, and their isolation makes them favored locations for illicit relations. Alternatively, there will be meeting places for harlotry. Sinners will be so brazen that they will openly designate places of morality. The Supreme Court backs that 100%. You can do all these things. We're just waiting for them. They almost made that legal where you can charge GST for it now? For harlotry.
Oh.
I think they want to legalize it. Don't they want to legalize it? It would be a cash boom.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be a crime.
After they finish the marijuana laws, they'll probably set up.
I'm just saying.
I'm working on that too.
Anyway. Okay, now we talk a little bit more focused on Eretz Yisrael. On Eretz Yisrael. V'ha-Galil yecherav, v'ha-Gavlan yoshum. And the Galilee will be destroyed, and the Gavlan desolated. Okay, that's the name of a place. Name of a place. Tilla mentions Gaval among the lands that border Eretz Yisrael to the south. Targum Yonason renders the land of Seir as Gavla. Okay, in places we're not really sure what that is. Okay, also, this is also true, Va'anche HaGvul, Yisovu Me'ir La'ir, and the people who dwell on the borders will wander about from town to town, which means the borders will be attacked intermittently at various points so that the inhabitants of border towns will be driven from town to town. I mean, they certainly are attacked. They haven't been driven. Well, it's like when they shell Sderot. When they shell Sderot, people have to move away from Sderot. That's exactly what it's talking about. No, that was a different one. That was a different statement. Now we're talking about the border towns. So Marsha suggests, in alternative translation, the people of the provinces. The term Gvulin is often applied to Eretz Yisrael outside of Jerusalem. Thus, the northern and southern environs of Eretz Yisrael will be utterly barren, while the inhabitants remaining in the inland area will wander as exile in their own land. Okay. Next, velo yechonenu, but they will not be succored. Succored means to have, like, what do you call it? To find favor in someone's eyes, right? Vechach vechach nosayfim tisarach, and the wisdom of scribes will decay. Okay, in other words, it's going to be less of that. Veyirei chet yamasu, and those who are afraid of sinning will be despised. People will insult them and feel they're not important. It's not the way to go. The emestein aderes, and truth will be absent. That's for sure. Now, ne'orim peneza kenim yalbinu, youth will make the faces of the elders white. In other words, they'll shame them publicly. Zekenim yamdu mipnei ketanim, elders will stand in the presence of minors. In other words, youth will demand honors from the elders. And that's really what's happening, because the old people, they want to look young now. That's the ultimate. And an older person should feel that they're dignified. Instead, no, I want to look like a young person. So that means you think the young person is the one who's running the show. Ben minavel of, the son will deride the father. Bas kamabama, the daughter rises against her mother. Kala b'chamusa, daughter-in-law will rise against her mother-in-law. Oive ish an shebeso, a man's enemies are the people of his own household. Go talk about that when you want to inherit your father's Yerusha and see what happens. Now, here's a great one. Pnei hador kipnei hakelev. The face of the generation like the face of a dog. Many interpretations for that, but one thing's for sure, you never saw some people with dogs before. And their whole lives revolve around these dogs now. It's crazy. You know, insurance for the dog, vet fees, psychiatric treatment for the dogs. It's like clothing for the dogs, designer clothes for the dogs.
Hotels, restaurants,
you know, the whole thing for the dogs. But the better shot, look at this. Whoa, I didn't want to do that at all. Let's go back. He says like this. He's learning. They'll be shameless. Another explanation, and the dogs are audacious. Alternatively, the face of generation refers to the affluent who will lack compassion, will refuse their desolate brethren charity. Like dogs, they refuse to share the meat they have scavenged. Now, here's a great pshat. This is a great pshat from Bochan and Wasser, heard from the Chavetz Chaim. This is a beautiful pshat. The face of generation are the leaders. The face is the leaders. The leader must guide his people authoritatively and teach them right from wrong. But in the period before Mashiach, the ostensible leaders will first check to see if their views will be popularly received, like a dog that follows back to see if his master follows. In other words, a dog a lot of times walks in front of his master. He walks in front of the master, but then turns back to see if the master is still following. So think, it looks like the dog's leading, but really it's the tail is wagging the dog, whatever the expression is. So in other words, the politicians, they don't decide anything. So what do people want? That's what my position is. Ask a politician, what's your position? You say, whatever you want it to be.
Not Putin doesn't do that.
Well, so that's why, you know, democracy has to be reigning before Mashiach comes. Yeah. Right? Haben eino mispayesh me'aviv. A father is not embarrassed from his front of his father. Va'alma yeshol nishon. Who can rely on alavinu shoshmar from heaven? So it's no different. The end of the day, as the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, or before Mashiach, we can only rely on our father. Okay, now according to all opinions, that's the end of the Mishnah. Or the extended Brisa. Now we get to the Gemara, although there's a bracket here as well. But anyway, Amara, so now we talked about going back. We remember yesterday we banned bridegrooms from wearing that wreath around their head. So Rav qualifies this. Amarav, lo shanu ela shel melach v'gofris. Rav said they only spoke of wreaths that have salt and sulfur. Okay, what do they mean? Before the prohibition, they would fashion wreaths of rock salt, translucent as quartz, and bearing ornamentation etched with sulfur. That was very fancy, like the designs that artisans etch in goldwork and silver. So those kind of wreaths we said you couldn't have. Those were fancy ones. But aval shel hadas v'shel ver. But what about a wreath made out of myrtles or roses is permitted? The cheap and expensive stuff would still be allowed. Shmuel Amar, no. Shmuel said, Av shel hadas v'shel ver aser. Any kind of wreath, even from the flowers, is not allowed. However, a lower level, shel kanim v'shel chelos mutter. But a wreath woven out of reeds, or what are sedges? Species of rushes which grow in water. Okay, much cheaper stuff. Okay, so it comes out. Wreaths of salt and sulfur are the most extravagant. Wreaths of rose or myrtle were considered less so, and wreaths of reeds were simpler still. Falevi Omar, Ravi said, no, Afshal Khan Vishal Khayasasar, even those are not allowed. No wreaths, all the wreaths out. Vichain Tana Levi and so Levi said by Masnisa in a Braisa, even reeds or sedges are prohibited, any of those things. Okay, now let's look at Gemara Gittin. Categorically blends any wreath, Gemara Gittin says straight out, and provides a pasuk from Yechezkel. Thus said the Lord Hashem Elohim, remove the turban and lift off the coronet. The verse should be exegetically interpreted. So long as the turban remains on the head of the Kohen Gadol, coronets may be placed on the head of other men. Now that the turban is removed from the Kohen Gadol, so we can't have anything else on our heads either, so that's usher. What else did they stop? Va'al ha'erus, and they decreed against a ban on erus. What was erus? We don't know what that is at all. That's what I was going to ask. My erus, what does the word erus mean? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar said, tavla dechad puma, a bell with one clapper. Literally with one mouth. They would ring such a bell in rhythm or singing or music at wedding celebrations. So that was not allowed now at the wedding celebrations. The Rambam describes ears as a drum with skin stretched across only one side of this cylindrical frame, a tabaret. Okay, so they prohibited that. Rabba bar Rav Huna avadle lebre tanbura. Rabba Ravuna prepared a tambourine. How do you like that? The words, mom, it's the same thing. Tambourine for the wedding of his son, or a timbrel. Rashi describes the timbrel as a musical instrument shaped like a flat sieve made of stretched skin dried, taut across a round frame. Metal wires are attached to the loop. When the timbrel is beaten with a thick stick, produce a ringing sound or a jingle. A skilled drummer can beat the timbrel rhythmically to emulate a melody. So anyway, Rav Huna did this for his son's wedding. Asa avuha. When Rabbi Arhuna's father came, the grandfather Tavra, he smashed it. Amarlei, he says, Michlof betavla dechad puma. He said to his son, a tambourine can be confused with a one-clappered bell. Since the one-clappered bell is not allowed, this one very much similar. So if we're going to allow the tambourine, people will think that the one-clappered bell is the same. It sounds the same. So therefore, he says, Zil avidle apuma dechatza. Go make your son a drum across the mouth of an urn. Stretch the skin across a vessel with depth in a bottom, not across an open hoop, so sound will be resonant rather than brilliant. Or do something else, o apuma dechazif, or across the mouth of a pitcher. In other words, so it's not as joyous. Adjust your joy, as it were. Okay, next. Bepulmas, back in the Mishnah. Bepulmas shall Titus gozer alitaris kalos. In the time of the campaign of Titus, they decreed a ban against the brides wearing the wreaths. First it was the men, now the brides. Again, my etaris kalos. What do we mean by the brides' wreaths? Amar Rabba Brachan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. What did they have? It was different than what the men had. What they had was an ear shel zahav, a city of gold. A tiara of gold with a city of gold fashioned. I guess maybe that's where they got Yerushalayim shel zahav from. I don't know. In identifying the prohibited bride's wreath as a city of gold, the word does not mean that golden coronets and other styles would be permitted. Any coronet worked in precious metal is in fact prohibited. The word merely selects the city of gold as a common example. The Mishnah in Shabbos implies that on weekdays a woman may wear a city of gold. That's a problem. Tosafos explained that the prescription of wreaths concern only grooms and brides as a counterpoint to immoderate joy. Okay, so others may wear wreaths. In other words, you could wear it during the week. You could wear it. But at a wedding, again, you want to have the ultimate of all the pleasure of a wedding and the fancy coronet. You can't have that. Tanya Namihach, we learned in a bride that said the same idea. Ezel Ataras Kala, what are the wreaths that a bride wears? It's an ear shell of a city of gold. Avalos, but you can make for them kippa shel milas. You can make for them a cap of fine wool. Rav Levi ruled above that bridegrooms may not wear wreaths of any material. With regard to a bride, however, the sages were more lenient and permitted any coronets except those of silver or gold. Okay, Tana, we learned in a braisa that continues this idea. Af al chupas chasanim garzu. They also decreed against bridegroom's canopies. My chupas chasanim, what do we mean by a bridegroom's canopy? Meaning zohoris hamuzavos, crimson cloths trimmed with gold. Okay, so that I guess is pretty fancy. Tanya nami hachi, we learned in our Bryce the same idea. Elu hein chupas chasanim, these are the prohibited bridegroom canopies. Zohoris hamuzavos, crimson cloths trimmed with gold. Avalosa, but what can you make? Papyrus. You can make a lattice out of interwoven weave, so it's a cheaper kind of a thing. And then the toluban, then you could suspend from the top of that kol mashir, so anything you want, such as colorful scarves and strips of gold foil can be hung from that. Okay, as long as you don't have gold in all those things as well. Okay, a little bit more to go. Also, what did we also decree when the Beis Hamikdash was? They also decreed for shelo yilam et espanol yavonis. Don't teach your son Greek. Tana Rabbanan. The rabbis give the background to this. Kishitzaru malchei beis chashmonai zelzeh. When the chashmonaim kings besieged each other. You have to know, again, in history, the chashmonaic dynasty, they split apart, and one brother was against the other brother. One was the king and one was against him. So they all wanted the crown from each other. So what was going on over here? So one of the descendants, Hoya Hyrcanus Mibachutz, Hyrcanus was on the outside of Yerushalayim. Aristobulus Mephim, and Aristobulus was on the inside. So let's see what's going on. Aristobulus held Jerusalem, while Hyrcanus was encamped around the city with the Roman legions that he had enlisted in this cause. Not such a good situation. Big civil war over here. So now what happened? Now you got to understand, if you're a siege, here's the issue. So one brother's in Yerushalayim, the other one's laying siege around him. Now there's certain things that have to be done in the temple. And you can't do it if you're laid siege. You can't go out and buy things. So what happened? So even though there was this civil war, they couldn't stop religious practice. So they have to get help from the group that was besieging the inner group. And there was kind of an agreement, even though we're fighting with each other, the show must go on in terms of spirituality. So b'chol yom v'yom hayu mishal shalim dinarim b'kupa. Every day, those within the city, the ones inside, would lower dinarim in a pouch over the city wall. Umalin lahan t'minim, and the Jews of the other side return would send up a lamb for the daily communal offering. The economy goes on. You had to have a korban tamid every day. You had to have a lamb every day. Is it going to stop the korban tamid? So okay, we'll pay for it. So they lowered down a pouch of money down, and then they brought up a lamb on the other side. Okay. The coins were for the temple treasury. The Jews of Hyrcanus' faction would use the money to purchase the animals. Okay, so now guess what? There was a Jew in Yerushalayim, an old man who's familiar with Greek wisdom. Lo az lahem Bechachma Yavanis. So he communicated in an insulting way with the besiegers in the language of Greek wisdom. In other words, a set of cryptic expressions or gestures understood only by the Greco-Roman aristocracy, not by common people. So in other words, he spoke to them, in other words, like a foreign language. And he spoke to them in a way that only they understood what was going on and other people did not understand. So he said to them like this, Kol's man she'oishkin bavoda, as long as they're going to be able to do the daily service, they're not going to be delivered in your hands. You're assisting them in bringing the korban tamid every day. As long as they're going to bring the korban tamid, you're never going to beat them because Hashem is still going to protect them. So, and he did this all in Greek language, because if other people would have heard it, they probably would have been upset with him. But he just told a few of them, and they kept it by keeping the secret through the Greek aristocratic language. Yes. So guess what they did? So the next day, Lamachar, the next day, Shoshalom Dinar Mekupa, so they sent out the money like normal, but instead of sending a sheep back, V'helu lahem chazir, they sent a pig up. Okay, now remember, when you're behind, you can't see that there's a pig. When you're behind, you're just pulling up the rope. So they put a pig up. So what happened? When the pig reached halfway up the wall, it stuck its hoofs into the wall. Okay. And then, Eretz Yisrael arba meas parsa. Eretz Yisrael quaked for over 400 parsas. That's 1,600 kilometers. I don't know if the whole Eretz Yisrael is 1,600 kilometers. In other words, Hashem was really upset with this. You setting up a pig over there, right? So what's going on? So so that was a disgrace, and that was going to stop the Korban Tamid. And they checked in, and they said, well, you know, it was from this old Jew who spoke. Who? Nobody knew about this? Well, I don't know. Then they found out. That this was the pig report, you know. So they found out it was the guy who spoke the aristocratic Greece. So Osasha, at that time, Amru, they said a declaration, Or Adam Shigdal Chazirim. First of all, curses the man who raises pigs in Eretz Yisrael. Also, Var Adam Shalomad Libno Chachmas Yavanis. Curses a man who teaches his son this Greek wisdom, this type of aristocratic language. So the Mishnah said it was during the time of the Titus campaign. So this really was a little bit earlier. So there's a question, historical issue. Okay. Va'al Osa Shana, and about that year we are taught, Masa Uba Omed Megagos Tsrifim. It happened that the Omer also was brought from the Gagos Tsrifim. Now we know what the Omer is. It says first barley crop you bring on the second day of Pesach. It was brought from a place called Gagos Tsrifim. A name of a place. Okay. And Ushte Halechem, and then there were two breads that had to be brought on Shavuos, were brought from a Bikas Ein Sover, from the valley of Ein Socher. Okay, it's another place. So that's more, it said in that year they brought it from these places. Okay, we'll stop over here, and we got this much to go to the end. So tomorrow, Monday,